something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan is dealing with a very sick child, so he is not with me today. But he was hoping for you last week, but he's not here this week. Mr. Matt Damon is here with us today. I'm using an opener. And we are paying tribute to Nathan and his fancy, fancy beers. We had to basically climb mountains to get our hands on this rarity. So I'm going to go ahead and just read the notes because I find that it's going to be very, very hard for me to describe this particular beer without actually like reading just the label and actually giving it to you. So it's Coors Light with a refreshing taste of iced tea. That's right, bitches. Iced tea flavored Coors Light. That's right. That's what we're drinking. Why the fuck not? We figured that was podcast worthy to say the least.
Supposedly I'm a week late. I'm on the show today. Kyle wanted me to be on the show last week. If you don't know who I am, I'm Matt Damon. I found that actually kind of funny, being that Kyle wanted me to be on the show and he thought they brought the wrong person on. So I guess I'm kind of infamous now with this show. It's Jaded fucking Gamercast. If you don't
know,
you know
where you are. This is Jaded fucking Gamercast, son. It tastes like piss and iced tea. Oh, horrendous.
It's horse piss.
Jesus Christ.
This is not a good idea. Well, we're already a bottle of champagne and 3/4 of a bottle of Di Serono into this. So.
Easily 3/4 of a bottle of Di Serono, yeah.
Oh, and my now God. We're drinking horse piss, so this is great.
Well, welcome to Jaded Gamercast. Okay, so Coors Light iced tea. This was actually my bad idea, so I can't blame you. But yeah, okay, so let's get into the show a little bit here. Talk about what we did this week in hobby. Matt, why don't you start us off?
I went out to John Kingsway, and I bought 2 Storm Ravens to support our favorite store in Edmonton.
Yes.
Anybody who does come to Edmonton, please go to John Kingsway and buy all your Games Workshop. buy all your Games Workshop models. No, I bought 2 Storm Ravens. I'm getting ready for Onslaught. Shout out to Wards Tournament. For the 40K Division, my army list is complete. I'm sending it in this week, and I'm going to start building the Storm Ravens. So I think that's a good segue into what we're going to talk about later, but what did you do?
I did basically gaming was primarily what I did. I gamed against Jason, did a little bit more Firestorm Armada, and gamed against you and did a little bit more Firestorm Armada.
Yeah.
2 more wins under my belt, and, you know, it's... I'm still enjoying the game quite a bit.
I can't bitch about Rathalos sucking this time because I played the Directorates. Right. We did a flip of the
fleet swap,
which is actually good. If you're starting to play, and we talked about this before on any game, if you're starting to play and you want to actually start really expanding, it's easy to flop with a good friend and see how other armies play around.
Well, and it's also nice because usually it's a list that you've played against a couple times, so you're not going in completely, you know, clueless to how this fleet is supposed to play. And the big reason why I took it and proposed this to Matt was, you bitch continually about your fleet. And I'm like, your fleet's good. What are you complaining about? I will prove to you that it's good. You're like, oh, you can't be Directorate. Oh my God, my cruisers suck balls. And I'm just like, did you see? Like, it was, you know, it was a very close game.
Yeah.
You know, because you are learning the game a little bit better. But like, you know, at the end of the day, I was able to pull out a very minor victory. And, you know, kind of prove to you, like, here's where this, your fleet can really shine. You just have to play the game properly, you know, and use your abilities properly and kind of walk away from it with a win. But, you know, that's kind of part of just learning the game. But other than that, I did absolutely no modeling. I was looking at my vampire counts again recently, wanted to get back into building them up, getting them back to tournament ready, but...
I'm already going to disrun on Cranberry. This thing's fucking...
No, finish it up. I'm going to finish it up just because...
Oh, we're going to get 3 bottles of beer in?
Awesome. I didn't say 3. The one we opened, I want to finish.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is bad.
Oh.
This is...
Oh.
JD Gamercast does not support Coors Light iced tea.
I...
Well, this was actually only released in Canada, too. So this is country stand.
Surprise, surprise.
This was only released in country stand, so people outside of country stand will not enjoy this refreshing beverage.
You know what
the
funniest thing is I've wanted to do a dirty drink episode for the longest time with Nathan, but Nathan's constantly avoiding the idea because I was saying, we need to go get, like, you know, 2 big bottles of Sourpuss and, like, prove how all this training has, like, affected our systems. And just, like,
I'm always ready for that episode.
And then just drink... drink that until the bottles are gone. And when the bottles are gone, the episode's over.
Nice. I'm in for that episode anytime.
Sorry. Sounds like a plan. Okay, so yeah, let's move on to higher learning for this week, which is Imperial Guard for Warhammer 40,000. We missed it last week, so you're here for it this week.
Awesome. The Imperial Gurad.
Yes, Imperial Gurad.
Was I on the last episode for Imperial Gurad?
I don't remember.
Actually. I'm pretty sure I was.
Okay, well, the focus this time around is primarily list building, tournament metagame, kind of things of that nature. You know, we did talk about this last time with Imperial Guard being that they are kind of the, you know, front of the pack along with Grey Knights, considering the fact that, you know, 5th edition, the way that it is right now, is a game of vehicles. And the Imperial Guard walk away with some of the best vehicles in the game for the cheapest prices. And
multiple choices.
Well, lots of different choices, but also, you know, really good choices in terms of flyers, which is something that, you know, Space Marines didn't necessarily have until just recently, right?
Sure.
So, you know, it's very easy to kind of look at Imperial Guard and say, like, yes, you want to have two Valkyries or two Vultures?
They're Valkyries and Vendettas now. The Vultures are the Forge World variant.
Vendettas?
Vendettas are the last canon ones. Valkyries are the Missile Pod and Multilaser ones.
Okay. So, again, it does very much seem, and if you've been to a tournament, then you already know this build. You've seen it about 100 times. You know, as many Chimeras as you can put on the table.
The infamous parking lot.
Two flyers.
Yep.
And just, that's pretty much your list, you know. If you have a Lehman Russ or two in there, go for it. But for the most part, you don't necessarily need to, right?
A Manticore is a staple. Obviously.
Why is the Manticore a big staple compared to a Lehman Russ?
Anytime you can take...
Don't bang the table.
Sorry. I thought they were telling me to drink my beer. I was like, well, fuck. Horse piss.
As penance, drink your horse piss.
Okay, sounds good. Anytime you can take a vehicle that has game-changing abilities... Anytime you can take a vehicle with game-changing abilities that's a strength 10 D3-shot weapon that can spray... And with how relevant vehicle parking lots are right now, anytime you can get a strength A weapon that's an ordnance template that can D3 off itself.
Right.
So you can place one, hit a good shot if you hit, and then supposedly it can hit two or three more vehicles on top of that is strength 10.
Right.
Even if it's strength 5 and it's not hitting all the time, strength 5 still is going to do enough damage to at least glance something most of the time.
And it's not out of the realm of, you know, logical thought when you think of it for points cost in terms of list building.
Yeah,
it's still under 200 points, isn't it?
I think it's like a 140-point tank.
Okay, well, yeah, then that, by all means, at that point, you know, when you're talking, like, half the price of a Land Raider.
Yeah.
By the way, so don't send me shit telling me that it's not exactly... Go fuck yourself. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't personally take Manticores, but I know in the Codex it's, like, around 120, 140 points. It's a steal of a deal. Great tank. It's just a staple in every list I see. It's for the metagame that's out there for the tournaments. If you're not taking a Manticore, I really don't know what you're doing. And it's easy to screen behind a wall of Lehman Russes or Chimeras, so it's never going to get a shot. So it's always going to get its four turns of shooting out.
Okay, so let's move on from the parking lot, the go to net list.
Yeah.
And let's talk about how you would build a more balanced kind of deal with all comers type tournament list with Imperial Guard.
I would go Air Cav personally. I think the Air Cav is a great list. I think the Air Cav's a great list, not because Valkyries and Vendettas are amazing. I think being able to outflank 7 to 8 vehicles and the mobility that it brings, especially if you flood them with veterans. Veterans are going to be a staple for any competitive.
Yeah, you're pretty much always going to be taking veterans just for the extra
anytime you can take...
And the extra ballistics.
Game. Anytime you can take scoring units that can outflank and you can bring your stuff on the side and then drop them out if you need to.
Right.
I think an Air Cav list is a great way to... it comes from the sides... It doesn't have the normal Imperial Guard look, but I've always, if we talk about Dream Armies, my Dream Army has always been a 7 or 8 Valkyrie/Vendetta Air Cav Carapace Armored Army at 1,700 points.
But all you're doing is basically doing like a...
Flying parking lot?
A sky version of a parking lot, and I'm trying to get away from, I'm trying to get back to traditional Imperial Guard.
Okay.
Or do you really feel like traditional Imperial Guard just doesn't function the way that it used to in 5th edition? Because... When you and I played, and it was your Imperial Guard versus my Necrons, and
I took a lot of troops.
I kicked the shit out of you like it was nothing. You've yet to beat me in 5th edition.
Yes, okay, we get it. You've yet to play my Blood Angels in 5th edition.
Because you never bring them, because you're a bitch.
Okay.
Every time you're just like, I'm going to bring my Blood Angels, Lang. Just you wait. That shit's coming. Oh, the Dreadnoughts. And then you show up with Guard, and I'm just like, where's your Blood Angels? You're just like, oh, you know, I wanted to take these guys instead. So that way, you can walk away from the table with a loss and still have a bullshit excuse.
because you don't have enough bullshit excuses already.
Oh, I can't. I have no reply to the beer that we're drinking right now. I don't have any bullshit excuses.
No, a troop, I would love to say that because I have 100 fucking painted guardsmen now, like, under my light, that I'd love to take that out there. It's just not fucking competitive. It just gets punched in the grill all the time. Al Raheem is a great build because you can outflank. Anytime you can outflank 70 to 80 troopers on someone's flank is on one dice roll is good, but it's a gimmick.
Well, I mean, that's what's really stopped me right now with my my Imperial Guard, and it's always kind of been that weird stumped Imperial Guard is I had a list built, then the new Codex came out, so I adjusted my list, and then a new Codex came out, and then my list was just worthless, and since then, I've just never gone back to my Talarin Imperial Guard army. I do want to do them. It's just, it's hard for me to want to play that list knowing that I'm walking in as with essentially a piece of garbage compared to what most people are expecting for Guard. You know, I have a lot more fun playing with my Space Marines and my Orcs and my Necrons. Like, it's just going to be a little bit you more
fun
for me.
You have a lot of fun, actually. The only time I actually see you having fun in 40K is when you play your Disco Dirty Necrons, actually.
It is a good time.
And and the new Necron Codex actually makes them playable, so it's, I don't know why you don't want to play more 40K.
It does make them fun. It does make them fun. Okay, so yeah, with Imperial Guard, obviously vehicles are going to be your biggest thing. You can really mix that up as much as you want. No one's going to look at you and say like, oh, you took 3 Chimeras and 2 Lumen Russ instead of 5 Chimeras and 1 Lumen. Like, no one's going to give you that shit. Like, it's not that important. What is important is you have a lot of armor on the table and you're making it very, very hard for your opponent to claim points. And you're making them travel the entire table before they can do anything to you. And you've got fast-moving scoring units all over the table. Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
So my question to propose then right now is, what do you think, from what we've seen of the rumored 6th edition, what do you think the Imperial Guard are going to go into?
Well, see, I think that's kind of where I was stumped, because I was thinking about that when I was reading the rules, saying, well, how is this going to adjust kind of the fucked-up metagame that we have right now? And I think the problem right now is that they haven't really done a ton of adjusting to the way that vehicles take damage.
Yeah.
They did it to a certain extent, but I would have to playtest it a lot to see if that's a dramatic enough change that it will stop people from wanting to take the all parking lot type armies. Right now, it doesn't seem like that there's really much deterrent for people to change their armies kind of back to what it was before.
Yeah, I think
But for Games Workshop, selling vehicle kits is the best thing in the world.
I think what we've seen with the 6th edition that is coming out, that from the rumors that we've seen, because it's going to be a lot of rumors talked about this podcast anyway, I think they've done a very funny way of making vehicles more destroyable, but they're still survivable because of the speed thing.
Well, it hasn't changed them that much, and that's kind of what I keep walking away from those rumored 6th edition releases saying is, you know, yes, them standing still makes them slightly harder to kill, so the parking lot of not moving, yeah, you might kill one more Chimera throughout the game.
But if they're moving.
But still, at the end of the game, the big thing with the Chimera is you just go drive them around the table waiting for the random game length to end so that you can drop shit in deployment zones. Like, that's still all it comes down to, right? Like Nathan was saying last time we were talking about, you know, Guard or Marines or any kind of parking lot style army is it's just like, you know, you play the first 3 turns without moving, you wait around the board, and then once it's done, you just start driving toward pieces of terrain, and you just randomly keep moving guys around from pieces of terrain, and that's basically all you're going to be doing.
For sure. No, yeah, I completely agree. And that's one thing. I think that's the interesting thing about with 6th edition coming around the corner right now. I think I don't think the lists are going to change that much. I just think they're going to play differently. And that's my personal opinion on Guard. So the good thing about being a Guard player is you already have a very good list. You're probably not going to see that big of a downfall when in about 5 months.
Well, I think you are going to look at changing a couple things here and there. And I think that we can expect to see changes in the Guard book when the Codex gets re-released.
But I don't think it's going to go back to the 4th edition mentality of troops.
No,
I don't think we're ever going to get back to that.
I think that you're wrong. I think what they're going to do is they are going to make troops a little bit more, just a little bit better. I'm not going to say that it's going to dominate the idea of a parking lot and vehicles, because again, that does fit with kind of one of the two aspects of Guard, which is hordes of guys or hordes of vehicles, right? It fits.
So the funny thing was, if you think about it in 4th edition, the all-troop guard army was an amazing build.
Yes.
And then 5th edition came around and it turned to 180, and now the all-mech guard build is the best build you can probably have, bar none, numbers-wise.
I think they're just going to give you more options to augment your troops, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like we're going to go back to kind of stuff that we saw before with the traits. right?
Yeah.
Which was very, very cool. I actually loved the trait system more than what the bullshit we have right now.
Yeah, sure.
It was the same thing with Marines. But anyways, okay, so Imperial Guard, I think these are the things to care about, but I do have a question for you. Does anybody even give a shit about Commissars anymore?
I love Commissars.
Matt gives a shit about Commissars.
I run Commissars in my conscripts
club. Other people.
Put it on the Facebook group. Discuss Commissars, because I would like to actually see, because I will defend Commissars till the death.
Because I think
Lord Commissars and normal Commissars are great, because anytime you can take a troop platoon and combine three squads into a 30-man squad with a Commissar, that 30-man squad isn't going anywhere. That can cap an objective and never run. And you still have three heavy weapons in it.
Right.
That's a great investment of, I don't know, 250 points.
Fair enough. Yeah, all right, good times. I just like them because I like the fluff. Like,
yeah, no.
But, I like my Commissars.
I totally agree with that. I think Commissars are good. I think Lord Commissars are good. I think Lord Commissars and conscript squads, and then another big blob of guys with two or three heavy weapons and another Commissar are great, because one can run up the table and distract, like I did with that huge Commissar squad that one time.
Yes.
And then another one can count
back. Which failed dramatically.
Well, it's because they die. they're not supposed to, like,
you know, dying is the same as failing dramatically, right?
Whatever. And then another one caps an objective. I personally think those are great builds on top of built around a mech list. But what do I know? I don't play that much Imperial Guard anymore.
Well, fair enough. All right, so I'm going to throw out a quick shout out here. We got a message from Mr. Brian Sin asking if we could throw a shout out for May Day, which is a event in Edmonton, Alberta, on May 5th. It is being run by the Edmonton Wargame Group and is done to show off the many hobbies out there, ranging from historical tabletop mini games to Warhammer 40,000. They are also including a Warhammer 40,000 doubles tournament,
which I think is very interesting. I can't play in it, but I'm a bigger proponent. I know you and Nathan don't like team tournaments or doubles tournaments.
I've never had fun with double tournaments.
I've had a blast with doubles
tournaments. Maybe I've always just had bad partners.
Maybe. But I think teaming up is a great idea. Anytime anybody around the area should definitely grab themselves a partner and go enjoy this tournament. I think doubles tournaments are a great way to expand the hobby, personally.
Yep, by all means. Also, if you're looking for more information, you can check this out at http://maydayconvention.com. All right, so now that that is out of the way, you have one last thing for this week in hobby.
Hopefully people just don't start...
They start jumping ship.
They start picketing May Day in a week or so.
I will applaud Brian's trust in the fact that us shouting it out will not completely destroy all of their attendance. Good on him. So you had another This Week in Hobby thing about a book that you had read.
I said in the last podcast I was not going to read No Fear for a long time because I wasn't interested in Ultramarines. I was actually pleasantly surprised that once I opened the book, I could not put it down.
So No Fear is Ultramarines. Is that Horus Heresy?
It's Horus Heresy. It's Ultramarines versus Warhammer.
So it's not just Graham McNeil copying Star Wars lines and, like, reiterating the story.
No, that's actually what that's actually, like, a lot of it. That's why I was
is
bringing it up.
Still?
No. That is hilarious. That's exactly what I was getting into. If you read the book, spoiler alert. If you read the book, Cor Ferron, the big guy in, like, the Word Bearers,
right?
He gets onto one of the Forge battle station things,
right?
And all the guys are, like, reprogramming the planet defense satellites.
Sure.
And he says, one of the Magos turns to me, he says, all systems are operational. He's like, you may fire when ready. And they turn all the planetary defense onto the Forge world. They're right beside them. They blow it up. You may fire when ready.
Oh,
boom!
Jesus Christ. Is it written by Graham McNeil?
I think it is.
Oh, God. Good on... I don't even know if it's funny anymore. It was like, okay, I watched the Star Wars Triple X porn parody recently.
But there's a second part to this, too.
Okay, let me get into the porn parody comment.
Go. Porn parody.
So I watched the Star Wars Triple X porn parody recently by Vivid Studios. And, you know, porn, good, great. Everybody loves porn. The problem with this is the sheer amount of incest in this porn is just utterly distracting. 50% of the sex scenes are incest. Like, there's no way around it. Like, it starts out with Vader forcing Leia to give him a blowjob and then busting a load in her face. You know, just crop dust in the chin. And then basically it goes to fucking,
I didn't think Vader had a dick.
It's a large black dick, apparently, even though he's not black, but hey, whatever, right? You know, James Earl Jones is black, so I guess it works. So then they skip to a non-incest scene, which is Obi-Wan Kenobi fucking a Tusken Raider in the ass. And then they skip to, which is hilarious because the whole time she's hissing like a cat. It makes no sense. I wonder if the guy so much as fucking watched Star Wars. So then it goes to the next scene, and it's like the Tonika sisters from the cantina.
Yeah.
Chalam's cantina.
I'm and going to my start, second bottle of Coors Light iced tea.
Get in it. And then they start fucking each other. So there's the second incest note, right? Even though
are they lesbian
even
sisters?
Though if you, apparently. Even though if you know the Star Wars universe the way that I do, you know that they weren't technically sisters at that moment. But that's a whole other story about undercover NRI agents.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get into that. And then at the end of that,
that's extended galaxies. Sometimes to people that doesn't even exist. No, to some people,
for some people, they could care less about the extended universe. So as far as anyone's concerned, they're sisters. So anyways, then there's another sex scene with a bunch of tertiary characters that I can barely name. And then after that, there's, a sex scene with Chewbacca fucking two female stormtroopers. This guy in a full Chewbacca suit with his dick out. Hilarious.
Nice. Cause
it's also really creepy. But then the final scene is Han and Luke double-teaming Leia. And at one point, they even say that, you know, Leia says to Luke or something like that, where she's just like, oh, it's no big deal. You know, I'm an orphan, too. And then they start, she starts sucking his cock, right? And the short of all of that is, by the time you get to the end of the film, it is kind of ruined for you, considering you can't really turn off your brain to think, like, yeah, it's incest, unless you're into that. But hey, go for it, right? But you also have to
I don't know if there's any listeners in Alabama and Kentucky.
Yeah, well, probably not.
Sorry if we offended you.
But if you take that all of that into account, and you think like, okay, well, in the movies, Luke and Leia, like, Leia kissed Luke, and there's a little bit of sexual tension, and at the end, everyone kind of goes like, yeah, it's a little bit creepy. And so you think, like, did the director honestly not know? Or was this just him kind of winking at the incest inside joke? But just winking way too many times, like that guy who just keeps winking at you until it's just so fucking creepy that you need to shove him away from you, right? So that's how the way I feel about Graham McNeil and Star Wars quotes in his books. It's just like, is he aware of the fact that this is happening, or is he just fucking clueless and he thinks these are original ideas? All right, tangent. I know.
I don't know, but there's any scene that involves Cor Ferron in this book. I can't help but think he's not Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, interesting.
Him and Rabu Gulman, a Primarch. Spoiler alert.
Who's gay?
Cor Ferron kicks the shit out of him with a force push, and then he's like Rabu Gulman's running at him, and he literally uses like chaos powers to like push him into the wall, and Rabu's like, oh my god, I'm in this wall, and I'm like all messed up now, and Cor Ferron walks up to him, and he's like, haha! Lightning. lightning.
Oh, force literally, lightning.
Like, no, I'm just like, so he force pushes and force lightnings him, and Rabu Goldman's like, oh my god, I'm getting fucking fucked up. And Cor Ferron like is all like cocky, and he like slits his throat with like the Athenum to try and turn him to chaos.
Sure.
And Rabu Goldman, with a power fist, reaches into his torso somehow with his huge ass fucking power fist.
Why not?
And picks his heart out, and he's like, oh, I got your heart. And he died. And then Cor Ferron's like seizuring, and he gets drug out of the room. Like, literally, that's the
this
epic.
This is like really fucked up. It's like he didn't actually get his heart. It's like, I got your nose, where it's just like he's got his thumb through his fingers, like, I got your heart. Cor Ferron's just looking at him, confused, kind of pitiful.
And then he starts seizuring. But, besides.
And then he starts seizuring.
Besides the actual horribly, horribly ripped off Star Wars parts. The book is great. The first half of the book is literally just Kalith getting apocalypse. Like if you ever envisioned, like, if our planet had, like, ships falling to the sky and, like, just the worst shit happening in, like, a huge galactic war.
Right, like when Endor, a month after the Death Star blows up, where, like, the entire planet becomes a fucking desert because of radiation.
Exactly.
And wreckage.
It's very well described. That, like, the best part of the best part is when the, Grand Cruiser falls out of the sky because it can't power up its engines fast enough and crashes into a city.
Yeah, it's like a nuke falling on a city, right?
That was an amazing part of the book. I could not put the book down. But Cor Ferron is definitely hilarious in the entire book, because he's Emperor fucking Palpatine.
Oh, right on. Why the fuck not? All right, well, let's kind of get into the topic for this week's show. which is just a lot of the new models that have been coming out, just because it has been generating a fair bit of discussion.
Well, last week you said GW is doing nothing, and then they obviously they listen to the podcast because they're like, oh, fuck you, next
that's
day.
That's like the third time that's happened, when we were just like, Grey Knights will never come out again, and like a week later they announced Grey Knights.
No, it was a day later. It was literally Monday morning. They were just like, Emperor's Empire's next, and you're just like,
yeah, why the fuck not, right? Okay, so, yeah, let's talk about Empire. What are your impressions on Empire right now?
This is actually very interesting.
Because you're starting an Empire army.
I have a fully built, pretty much, Empire army now. I'm getting in the fantasy.
Stop hitting the fucking table.
Sorry. why'd you slap me? This is the third time you slapped me tonight.
Second.
Whatever.
Matt can't count.
No.
It's okay. It's not like a real slap. It's not like a Knox Fillings out slap. It's not like Nathan's not here.
not like Nathan slapping you across the fucking grill. I'm actually very interested in the Empire book. Some of you have already seen my comments about what I think about the Empire book. It's jaded fucking gamercast, people. I'm gonna bitch about it if there's a 1-point increase or not.
Why not? But why would you bitch about it at this point? That's what I don't get.
Because it really affects the army I've already built. I have a lot of state troops and I have a lot of mortars. It's like two of the things that I thought were really good in the book that. But they didn't seem unbalanced.
Okay, but you're going really heavily into rumors at this point with regards to rules, though, aren't you?
No, for sure. And but again, I can tangent as much as I want.
I'm the only one who's allowed to tangent.
When the book comes out, we'll see what happens. I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of great stuff that involves the new fucking models that I don't like that are going to make the stuff great, where you can ride on a fucking chariot and make bubbles bigger and you can make your troops cool. I understand that. It's selling fucking models. But at the end of the day, I'm not interested in any of them. I don't want fucking knights riding fucking retarded roosters or fucking...
chocobos.
Chocobos or fucking... What did I call them before? Ostriches. They look like fucking ostriches with four legs.
See, they remind me, hilariously enough, of the Tanith on XA Cardinal.
Oh, okay.
Because they were riding, riding ostrich chocobos. And I was just like, yeah, let's do it! But okay, demigriffins, right? That's what they're called.
Yeah.
Personally, I think they look fine. Like, I really don't have a problem with them. I know a lot of people have a problem with the griffins and the two-headed griffins and the varied griffins.
The weird thing about this griffin is everything looks great till you get to the head part where the head's like trying to like fucking eat its own chin. I don't get that. If the head was out attacking something, it would look better. But because it's like each of the heads, even the double-headed one or the single-headed one, it's just like it's being reined back and it's like trying to eat itself, literally, in its own throat. If it was a little more outstretched and it was a little more... Because everything looks great till the in the body part, till the head. So I think when they had to do the double head thing, or like the two different heads pose, I think they had a great body sculpt, and they're just like, oh, fuck. Like, how are we going to do this head pose with these models, right? Not the more dynamic poses, just... I don't think it came out what they were envisioning.
I see the initial reaction that people are getting to it.
Yeah.
But I don't honestly think that it's all that bad. I think that it has to do
with... No, the kit's not bad at all. That's one of the better kits that they're releasing.
I think that it has to do with just the picture. Like, I think I'll definitely be reserving judgment on that particular model until I actually see it. Because to be perfectly honest, you know, yes, the angle makes it look a little bit strange, but, you know, I understand what the modeler was doing. They're having it reared back. You know, he's on his hind legs, he got one claw out, so his head's back. Like, I understand it, so I don't really have a problem with it. I like that it's a lot bigger. I mean, yes. I really appreciate the fact that it's a lot bigger. I think that we will definitely be seeing some better monster stats for it.
It's literally epic-sized, for sure. This is a jumbo griffin. Yes. This is definitely a fucking jumbo griffin.
Epic, it kind of matches that scale, to say the least. But no, let's get back to the demigriffins here. And then we'll kind of talk about the Death Star laser chariots.
Fuck. Okay.
But, hey, as many Star Wars quotes as I can throw in here, I'll do it. But, okay, the demigriffin chariots, the demigriffin cavalry, they look to be monstrous cavalry, which I really like. They're on larger bases, so that makes total sense. I think we're going to see a slightly higher toughness, maybe a slightly higher weapon skill and initiative, which is really cool for monstrous cavalry because you don't tend to see that on a lot of other monstrous cavalry. So add a new aspect to the game. And for somebody like me who just fucking hates painting horses and was so disappointed with Retardo Cats, that like a new edition of monstrous cavalry is kind of exciting for me. I don't think they look that bad. I think they look a little strange, yes, but I think that you can kind of mute a lot of that. Like, I'll definitely be painting them black if I do them, just for the fact that, like, I'm just like, black chocobo, why not, right? Like, by all means. It's very easy. I can do it quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that if you do it in kind of a subdued tone, the pictures that we saw, they were primarily
brown.
Brown, but they had like lots of yellows and whites in
them. Yeah, they did.
I feel like that was just a little bit too much color. Like, I feel like if you did them a little bit more subdued and maybe didn't do the beak in like a bright yellow, you'd kind of get away with having them be just a little bit less kind of, I don't know, just outlandish looking.
Yeah.
And you could get away with having them looking a little bit better.
I've already said they do look a little, like most of the models that, I don't know if it's the pictures, but a lot of the models we're seeing for the new Empire release.
No, just back up a little bit.
Is that they're ridiculous looking. They all, everything we've seen, especially in those White Dwarf pictures, they look kind of ridiculous. The gold chocobo is being...
Why did I open another one?
I don't know. Why are you following my... I'm digging the dive into the fucking
ice
tea.
You know me, I'll go one for one.
Okay, well, this is the challenge then.
Oh, God.
Are you ready to accept?
I don't think I have a choice, to be perfectly honest.
You can't get a drink on your own show.
You know, like, if Abaddon had a nipple and it secreted some sort of fluid, this would be what came from his...
If Papa Nurgle had a beer...
Papa Nurgle had a beer. I don't know, but we all know Papa Nurgle has knuckles. Nipples. Knuckles?
He's not fucking Slaanesh.
Alright, Slaanesh juice. Let's call this Slaanesh juice. Because it's pretty fucking gross.
It is. Okay.
So, yeah. Alright, let's talk about the Death Star laser chariot.
I think the Celestial laser chariot is fucking funnier with the universe on it for no reason.
The big constellation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the big constellation. Space Marines don't get a pass on this, so I'm not gonna give Fantasy a pass on this either. It's kind of fetishy. I'm sorry. The wizard temples, they're getting fetishy. We had the little one. We had the inverse into it with the flaming hobo, and they're just like, people like the flaming hobo, so let's make fucking chariots with fucking planets and lasers and. And then you have like the fucking you have the plastic mage kit.
That is a stretch.
You have the plastic mage kit, and the one guy has a rose petaled scythe because he's the death wizard, and you have the flaming wizard because he's a flame, and you have the siesta one.
Oh, okay.
The wizard temples are fucking fetishy. They're fetish wizards.
No,
they are.
No.
The beast guy is no shirt. He's fucking Jersey Shore fucking wizard guy.
All right, fair enough. Because Snooki would be like a lore of beast, some sort of Wissens wild form. No. Okay, listen, you're wrong about that because I like the idea that what we're getting in the Empire book when it gets released is some stuff that allows the Empire, who essentially is the Colleges of Magic, and
yeah,
they
but
have
you like the idea,
access
but you, but
to all
but you,
the lores.
You like the idea, but the way they're doing it is kind of...
I will not buy the models unless they are unbelievably good in the rules. Like, they would have to be amazingly good in the rules for me to buy the models, because I don't particularly like the models. And I feel like you're better off taking a general... Like, take a level 4, put them on a carpet, or put them on a horse... Pegasus, if you can get your hands on it, or take Balthazar Gel, right? So I think for Magic, it's not something that I'm necessarily interested in. But for the most part, like, I like the idea that we are giving Empire some option to kind of go from it. Are the wizards who study their specific lore fetishy? Sure. But listen, man, outside of Ulrich, there's not a single army in the Empire that literally is so hyper-fetishized that, like, they've got vampire teeth, and they're all got gems of blood all over them, and they have a completely gay elector count. I mean, utterly gay. Like, gaggling, like, you know what I mean. Like, back of the throat, you don't taste it if it's at the back of your throat swallow. That kind of Primarch.
Sanguinius is gay. You are talking about, hey, Black Library has an Blood Angel book coming out for Horus Heresy.
Oh, cool.
I know. I know you're going to read it. I'm going to tell you about it.
I will not read it. I stopped reading the Horus Heresy a while back. Okay, so, yeah, the Celestial one I think looks a bit weird. I think that the Lore of Light Wizard one looks a bit weird. I'm wondering if there are any other variations on those kits, though, because I think...
Well, there's the Pope Pimpmobile. The Pope Mobile one too.
Pimp your Pope Mobile.
Well, I think it's cool that they're
stop hitting the table.
I think it's cool because they're bringing out a kit that does three different fucking models. Really?
Yes.
I think that's cool. At least GW is kind of making it cheap to buy this kit.
Well, we haven't seen the price yet, so I wouldn't say that necessarily.
It's probably a $90
like
kit.
$75. But, you know, like I said, I think that it's interesting that what we've seen is the Lore of Light and the Lore of Heavens, right? Because Lore of Heavens is definitely kind of an underused lore, and it's got a lot of weird choices. And I would be interested to see if something like that would give you Lore Master, or if something like that would give you additional bonuses to the types of damage that you could get.
Hopefully driving a giant goddamn chariot gives you fucking Lore Master. Like, you're driving... I guarantee that model's
necessarily,
I guarantee that model's probably 220 points.
Well, I mean, look at the Engine of the Gods for Lizardmen. You just get a plus one to cast and a couple of bound spells.
Well, I think we'll be able to rent it... What is the most closest thing resembling to that chariot right now that has been released in our book?
Engine of the Gods, probably.
No, I think the one from Vampire Counts. The flying fucking ghost fucking throne thing.
Oh, the Coven Throne.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like that. And what's that priced at right now?
Well, how many points price?
How many points price?
Like 210?
Yeah,
210,
so,
275?
So I think it's going to be about a 220 point engine thing for Empire. We'll have to see the rules, but... That investment?
I don't know if they go that far, though, because they do have other monsters for options in the list,
yeah.
And it would be really hard to kind of rationalize a level 4 in there. What kind of makes the Coven Throne worthwhile is you can get away with just taking, you know, like a low-level vampire and putting it on there, and it doesn't necessarily add a lot to their magic, right? Like, these are clearly meant to add a lot to the magic phase for the Empire players. It would be nice to see them get Lore Master, but I think, to be perfectly honest, what we're going to see is this is basically going to give you a ward save, and it's going to give you additional casting bonuses to certain spells in the lores that obviously you're trying to cast through.
Like the Comet for Comet Cast. Is it Comet Castendora still?
Comet of Castendora, yeah.
Yeah, it's for the Heavens one.
Yeah, very likely that's what it's going to give you.
Yeah.
I don't think that they would go so far as to give you, like, Book of Hoeth type stuff where you're getting automatic irresistibles on doubles or anything
that.
Because I think they're phasing that out of the game for the most part.
They're either phasing that out of the game or they're just keeping that for High Elves only, because High Elves are kind of the in-fluff, uber-fucking
Fair
magic
enough.
Race.
Yep, but again, I understand that these, you know, giving wizards a little bit more than just a magic item that makes them great. Is kind of a cool thing. So, you know what? All power to you. I'm not going to buy it, but I don't have anything against the models. I don't have anything against the idea. It's just not something that I'm particularly building my list around. I think if you're going to buy the extra points to get yourself something like that, you're better off just buying Balthazar Gelt. Which kind of brings me to the next thing, is we're probably going to see Balthazar Gelt change quite a bit in the next version of the game. It'll probably be cheaper and not nearly as good.
No, because are they going to take away his Lore Master? You think?
Well, I don't think they'll take away his Lore Master, but I think they'll take away his plus two to cast, and I think that they'll take away some of the bonuses that he has for, like, magic resistance and things of that nature.
Okay.
I mean, good enough that he gets to be cheap, but I don't think that they're really going to let him be as good as he is right now. But, you know, the weird thing about Balthazar Gelt is there's a lot of people out there who still kind of look at him and say, he's not worth the points that you're paying for him, which is crazy, but
How much is he?
Like 300 points.
He's only 300? Because I thought he was, like...
300 or 400, like he's.
Yeah, but I thought he was like 400, so that make him put in the techless level then. But techless.
No,
he's
cheaper than techless.
He's cheaper than techless. Okay, because I thought
if
he was
I
like.
Correctly.
I thought he was 400. I thought techless was 425, and I was like, well, if you're comparing him to techless, he's definitely not worth 400 points. But in a par rating for the Empire Army at 400 points, he's pretty good.
How do you?
So it's a weird kind of conundrum he's in.
See, I'd still put him up there better than Teclis, just for the fact that he has flight, he's got a better save, he's got better toughness, he's got better abilities. Like, yeah, he doesn't get to cast on the doubles all the time with Irresistible, but he's a much more dependable, much more survivable wizard.
He's not getting killed in turn three.
Well, and that's the big thing, right? Like, he's not just getting punched to death by a goblin. Or, you know, dies because he drank some fucking Coors Light iced tea. Oh, Jesus.
Please. Go out and ban Coors Light iced tea from every liquor store you can ever get.
Fucking ridiculous.
Do we have? Is it Jada Gamer Cast cursed if we say it? Go buy this shit, and then people don't do it.
I don't know.
just don't buy it.
The whole thing is just kind of a stupid, like, personal inner joke meme to begin with. So I don't know how you can apply that to real life in any other situation. You just did a thumbs up. This is a podcast.
I know.
People can't see that, Matt, and I'm not impressed. Okay. So for the Empire, we've seen a couple other models. We've seen Warrior Priests. We've seen some characters.
The character models are actually really good. I think the Witch Hunter being in the book period is actually very interesting.
Yeah, I think the Witch Hunter was the thing that kind of piqued my interest more than anything else. Just for the fact that you kind of have to wonder where he's going to sit. Because clearly, you know, your general and your BSB are going to fit best in your state troops. You know, a warrior priest will fit good in your state troops, but he kind of ends up working a little bit better in a squad of flagellants.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at all these other characters and you say like, oh yeah, they clearly fit into these particular sections here, 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 and here. You kind of have to wonder where a witch hunter is going to fit into the list. Is he going to be running around solo? Is he going to be a character killer? Which I think is the more likely situation. Or are we really going to see the Inquisitor kind of be a replacement for the general?
I think he's going to roll with Huntsman, actually, with a crossbow.
Really?
And, yeah. I think Huntsmen are a great unit, by the way.
Good for you.
Because, well, they're not fucking Shadow Warriors.
Okay, fair enough. That doesn't mean that they're still worth taking.
No, they're 10 points, and they're a scouting fucking Empire unit.
No, you're right. You're totally right.
Whatever. Yeah. Anyways, I think he's gonna have.
You should bring him to our next game. That'd be awesome.
I think he's gonna have scouting or something where he can go. I don't think he's gonna have the assassin stuff where he can like just jump on his squads. But I think he's gonna be able to scout. I think he's gonna be able to go kind of deploy wherever he wants. And I think he's gonna have a crossbow or like a brace of pistols, and he's gonna be able to shoot things at medium range or go in and assassinate someone before he dies. I don't think he's gonna be leading any squads though, except for a squad that scouts, which is the only squad I can think of is Huntsman.
Well, I think that's fair, to be perfectly honest. I think that is fair. But as you said, the characters are really nice. And I think that if there's anything GW has been doing right for the longest time, it's that all of the characters they've been releasing, with a very bare minimum few exceptions, all of their characters have always been really gorgeous. Done well, done right, you know, done in such a way that they rank up well, and, you know, you can be very happy in painting these up for, like, a contest or something like that, or having them be the centerpiece of your army. But for the most part, you know, like, I don't see any of them kind of taking the cake and making me say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to change my army list around what's already there, which kind of makes me think that what we're going to see with the Empire is going to be a lot of... Just a lot of the same. Like, we may get a couple changes. Obviously, we're going to see Griffins change. Obviously, we're going to see Demi-Griffins in there. I think that Knights are going to get a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, but for the most part, they're going to want you to buy Demi-Griffins. Nathan's not wrong in posting on the Facebook page and saying specifically, like, we're going to see points change and we're going to see prices change in such a way that everyone who had Knights before is going to throw them out to go get themselves fucking Chocobos.
I think that's completely true. I think you touched on a great point, though, that with this being a 40k heavy release year with 6th edition coming out, I think this was a safe army to release. Because it's already established.
But do you really think safety was their goal with Empire?
No, I think it doesn't. I think it's an easy army to release at this time, and it doesn't affect the bottom line that much because people are going to buy it because it's a popular army.
Well, yes, they are a popular army, just like Vampire Counts were, just like, exactly. You know, Tomb Kings and all the other armies that really needed it.
So with the release schedule that's happening right now that we know of, and with what we know that's coming up, Empire being in this slot completely makes fucking sense, because Bretonnia is a little bit of a fucking...
Underplayed.
Not even underplayed, it's more of a risk, because it needs more work. Wood Elves definitely need more work, and what's the other army book that hasn't been... Dwarves definitely need more work. So, Empire being in this release slot completely makes sense for people who are just like, oh, Empire, they don't need a new book. Well, they don't need a new book, but this release slot needs to be filled with somebody, so why not take an established army that doesn't really need a lot of work, we can add some brand new models, and it's going to be an easy way to run to the bank and cash those checks. This is the army that cashes the checks in April for Games Workshop.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I guarantee if we ever had an ear in on the actual... boardroom meetings of why GW releases stuff at such time, I guarantee Dwarves and High Wood Elves, you know, the other ones are in production right now, but Empire was such an easy one to put in this slot, especially with 40k coming up all summer, it only made sense for them to release right now.
Yeah,
and that's from a business standpoint, purely.
Well, I mean, I think that that's part of it, but I also think the fact that Empire is a popular list, just like Orcs, you know, Orcs didn't necessarily need a new book. They were in pretty good shape. They had nice models. They were, yeah. You know, everyone, there were still tons of people out there playing Orcs and Goblins. So it wasn't necessarily something they needed to do. It was just it was popular. But I think it's a combination of the two, kind of what you're saying and kind of the fact that they are very popular and people aren't necessarily just chucking out all their empire. Well, yeah. Every decision they make is a business decision.
Oh, for sure.
Outside of stupid decisions that they claim are business decisions. So what about 40K releases?
The Storm Eagle.
Right, the Storm Eagle.
Are we going to do the stupidity check right now?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, the stupidity check this week is definitely the Storm Eagle, but it's not for the actual points that you think that we're going to talk about. Anytime...
Yeah, is it, stupid. It's is not it, what you think,
is this the first,
says Matt.
Is this the first time Forge World's been the stupidity check?
Well, no, because we had the Rock Golem
release
where it was just like, go in your backyard and glue some shit together.
Okay, the Storm Eagle, I personally fucking hate the kit. I think it looks literally the only time I see it being played is when your kid, who's 5 years old, is flying it around the living room being like, ah, and shooting the missiles at people. That's literally what I think of this kit. But
so how is it any different from the short bus?
No. But the stupidity...
Because I hate it for all the same reasons.
The stupidity check is that people took such a negative ploy to it actually being released on April Fool's that Forge World had to go on their website and reinforce to people that this was not an April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
They literally went on the website and was like, this is not an April Fool's joke. This is actually being released on April 1st.
You would think at this point that people would actually realize that releasing anything on April 1st is always going to be taken negatively.
Yeah.
But again, okay, let's talk about the model a little bit here.
Well,
it's to
part,
me...
Part two of the stupidity check, Forge World couldn't even get the Legion number right on the Salamanders.
Really?
Yeah, it's they marked the flyer as Legion 8, and they're actually Legion 18.
What a bunch of idiots!
So they forgot the X in front of it. Like they just I literally think they mailed this in. like it literally looks like such
a very loose understanding of Roman numerals.
Like they just mailed this fucking thing in, and they're like, "Oh, well, I guess we'll release it right now. Let's get it." Because
trying to sell you doors that they'll make separately down the road.
Because the picture was on the website. You could search the picture on the website 3 days before. It was not a very well done release of something that should be taken very seriously if it's a Space Marine flyer release.
I don't know if you should take that seriously, though. Because, again, like I said, I'm going to come right back to it. Like, I hate it for all the same reasons I hate the Storm Raven.
Which is?
Well, it's just these little weird flyers, right? Like, they don't make any sense to me. Like, the idea... Okay, so who's using this primarily, right? Space Marines, right?
I believe this will be in... I don't know if it's going to be in the Dark Angel Codex. I'm pretty sure this will be in the Dark Angel Codex because it's being released. It's probably... That's the first... They're not doing Space Marines for the first release of 6th Edition. They're doing Dark Angels.
Right.
That's what everything is pointing to right now. I would be in shock if this is not in the Dark Angel Codex, period. So it's going to be Dark Angels and probably Vanilla Marines. And I wouldn't be surprised if Vanilla Marines don't get a Storm Raven also. Like they'll get two flyers.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But again, like the little bitty flyers, like to me, I keep looking at it going like, yeah, but just give me a Thunderhawk. Like why are we still fucking around with this? I understand that Forge World already makes a Thunderhawk, but it's the idea that they keep deciding to make these little flyers that they feel are a little bit more sellable for the game. And every time I look at them, I just keep thinking to myself like, but it's so stupid. Like it just doesn't make sense. It's ruining 40K.
The Thunderhawk has been priced out of normal 40K games. Storm Ravens and now the Storm Eagle can be actually played in normal 40K games. It's not Storm Thunderhawks in the fluff and everything you read are only in like literally an apocalypse formation. You cannot play a Thunderhawk in a normal 40K game. It's just
this goes back to them making up bullshit, though.
With the fluff Nazis that are out there already, because they can't even get around normal stuff happening in the fluff period with their army list. You think someone's gonna buy a fucking Thunderhawk?
So in the fluff,
with one hell point.
But fuck you, in the fluff, where did they get the standard template to suddenly start making the fucking Storm Eagle? Right, like it's just they keep adding this bullshit. It's like them adding wolves and cyber wolves and everybody
and
takes their
guard.
It's all that stuff drives me crazy. Like I understand why they're doing it, but it kills me. It just kills me that they keep doing this over and over and over again when there's so much more that they could be doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're releasing so many more new models that nobody needs or cares about, and they keep making them, you know, so good that people can't really get around it. And again, I'm not just talking about Forge World here. I'm talking about GW in general. It just, it utterly just kills all of my urge to play when I look at these lists and I go like, yeah, I want to be competitive in Warhammer 40,000, but is this what I have to do to make that work now? But again, it's Forge World, whatever, I may be overreacting. Let's kind of push on here. Let's push on a little bit, because we do have about 10 minutes left here, and I did want to talk about the Mark II releases that we saw recently for Firestorm Armada, because we didn't get a chance to talk about that recently.
Okay, yeah, sounds good to me.
So basically what happened, if you look on the Facebook group, we do have some links to a bunch of Mark II releases. Some of them are ones that we've already seen, some of them are new ones. I think the Aquans come out really big in this one. They get a Mark II cruiser, Mark II frigates, and a Mark II carrier.
I think Spartan Games, I think Aquans, even though they might not be the primary race, I think that's the race they love.
Oh, there's a designer there who just loves. Can't get enough of their Aquans and is pissed off at the fact that, like, nobody wants to play them. Like,
and
he thinks...
And they have a battle carrier. They have all the best shit. Well, no one plays them.
This is the guy who thinks that, like, seashells in space is the coolest fucking idea on the planet, right? He loves that idea. He just doesn't understand why people don't like seashells in space. You know, fair enough. Good for him. But they made it look a lot more like the Medusa.
But there's a lot of Aquan releases. There's, even like when everybody else was like, oh,
they have the most models right now. Yeah.
Even when like people are like, oh, this is the fleet box. Aquans are like, this is the fleet box. With a battle carrier and like all this other cool shit. And then they have, and then this release, there's like one Solarian thing, one director thing, a bunch of cruisers for everybody else. And then like the Aquans is like five different things. It's like,
there's quite a few in there. But yeah, I mean, okay, so what I've seen so far, I did get to see the stat card for the Mark II battleship for the Dendrenzi, and it is a slightly increased stat line. I sent an email off to Spartan Games, I never got a reply, asking for when the rules for these models were going to be released, because I was saying to him, saying to the contact, you know, I'd like to know what the rules are before I start buying these ships. You know, what are the squad sizes? What are the rules? Like, is it worth it for me to be buying these models?
Yeah.
And they've kind of been a bit lax lately in terms of sending out all of those PDF files for people to kind of look at before they buy it.
I think the weird thing is that the Mark II cruisers, and I'm only talking about cruisers only right now, fall in a weird conundrum, because heavy cruisers are only really 15 points more than a normal cruiser.
Yes.
So, if we're talking about a Mark II cruiser, a Mark II cruiser is a straight upgrade.
Mine are 25 more. Or 20.
20 more. Mine are 15 more. In the Rathalza.
Right, okay.
So, if I'm buying the Mark II cruisers, what am I getting a 10-point increase for just a little bit better than my normal cruisers? When the heavy cruisers are still just a way better buy for 5 points more?
Well,
it's one of those things where I think just the cruisers only by themselves, a battleship, yeah, for sure, 10 more points, an extra movement stat, extra like a little better guns here and there, totally makes fucking sense. But for the cruisers, a little bit of a different look at it.
But we don't know what the points cost is, right?
Exactly.
Like if it's a 5-point increase, which is what I'm suspecting, because the difference between the Dendrenzi battleship and the Mark II Dendrenzi battleship, the Nautilus class or whatever it is, Nautica. Yeah, like the clothing line for pretentious douchebags. It's only 10 points more. It has one additional crew point. It has one additional movement point. And it has one additional point of damage on its gun racks. So not even its primary weapon system. So what I kind of feel like is going to happen is they're basically going to give you a slightly increased value, which is on things that aren't necessarily what the cruisers are good for, right? So if
you fix forward fire fucking power?
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, okay.
So I feel like, okay, for the Directorate, if I had to guess, I would probably get one more assault point, I would probably get one more movement point, and then I might get one more point defense.
Yeah.
But, like, my main weapons battery firepower is not going to be increased, my torpedoes are not going to be increased, my critical rating, my damage rating are not going to be increased, and I'll probably end up paying 5 points more for those changes, right? So I feel like that's not bad for the cost that I'm paying for it, considering the fact that, say I was building a list, and I had 15 points left over, so instead of buying 3 interceptors, I decide to update upgrade my squad of Mark 1s to Mark 2s and throw them on the board instead. Like, I feel like what they're basically giving you in terms of the story is very cool. The story around it basically being that the war is ongoing. And that's kind of always been their thing. It was
and
like
they're
back,
upgrading.
Well, yeah, it was like back in the day when 40K was played around the idea that the war is ongoing and the story is evolving as you go. They've kind of abandoned that in Warhammer 40,000, where now they're just like,
well, they're scared for some reason to make it the 41st millennium, not the 40th millennium, or the 42nd millennium. Sorry, would it be 42nd?
I could care less.
42nd millennium.
It's
whatever.
Still going to be Warhammer 40,000.
The next one, yeah, they're scared someone's going to come up and be like, well, if they upgrade the timeline past 3.99999, it's going to be the 41st millennium. How can they market that? It's like, if that's the fucking reason they're not expanding the storyline, then someone's fucking retarded.
Well, I just think it's not their big issue, right? Yeah. Whereas with Firestorm Armada, it's a young enough game that they're able to turn around and say, yeah, you know what? The story's still, you know, it's ongoing. When we release the next rulebook, you're going to get an update on the story.
I thought the Storm Zone's going. It's Storm Zone.
Well,
right?
Yeah, Storm Zone is the major conflict.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, the idea basically that they have here is that, you know, there are ships out there that are warships that were warships kind of before this war started. And then as soon as war becomes a big thing, everyone starts upgrading their military.
Yeah.
So now what you're seeing is the Mark II cruisers, which are slightly better than what was there before, because you don't ever see people say like, you know, we just need to make this worse, you know, cheaper and worse. So what you're basically getting out of all of this is, you know, something that's just slightly better, that if you have a couple of extra points left over to spend, you know, 15 points left over, and you don't want to buy, like I said, 3 interceptors, you can upgrade them and they will just be ever so slightly better. Not in the ways that really, really matter.
Yeah.
Right?
Just a little upgrade. I think with the Rathalza, what we're seeing, especially the aesthetics with the, it looks like armor plating, is that we're going to get 5 points more. For what you think? I think it's going to be a 10-point upgrade. You think it's going to be a 5-point upgrade?
Well, it's a 10-point upgrade on the battleship.
I think it's going to be a hull point for the Rathalza.
Just because they're
adding the armor plating.
If you look at the build your own ship rules,
yeah,
an extra hull point is quite a bit of points. Like, it's not just 5 points.
See, that's why I think it's going to be 10 for us. For
right.
me, personally. I think it's going to be 10 across the board for us because it's going to be cruisers, Mark II cruisers, heavy cruisers, one hull point each upgrade. Because the heavy cruisers are 2 points more for us. But it's just from the aesthetics of what I see of the cruiser. The cruiser looks the exact, except that they do it fucking backwards again. Because for some reason they don't understand how which way a fucking Rathalza fucking cruiser flies.
Mm-hmm.
We've had this discussion like 4 times already. Look at the fucking box.
Yeah, which way is it pointing? Which way is the front? But, whatever.
It looks like just that it's going to be, it looks like a hull point. Because they're just adding armor to it.
You like the way that the Rathalza ships look the best?
Yeah, I still think the reason why I was still drawn to them at the end of the day is that I think they're aesthetically the sweetest looking fleet.
I really, really like the way that they changed the Aquans. I think that the Terrans, the fact that they're kind of changing everything to look a lot more like the Dreadnought and the heavy cruisers, I think that that's cool, but I think it takes away from what I loved about the Terrans to begin with, which was the fact that they all look really boxy and kind of plain.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that was what gave them their charm, and now they're kind of moving away from that, trying to make them look a lot sharper,
well, like,
which I'm not a huge
3D,
fan of.
Or 3D.
Or like, more 3D, yeah,
they're,
sure.
They're doing this, like, weird 3D triangle thing right now.
Well, that's like the Dreadnought.
Yeah.
Right? And the shield ships. But for the most part, you know, like, I really do like the Aquan stuff as well. I think anybody who kind of was on the fence for Aquan, like, they like the idea of
Scott fucking Martin.
Yeah. Water ships in space. You know, you do get to kind of walk away from that. I've always said to people, the only fleet that I will not recommend you buy the starter kit for is the Aquans. Because you don't want a battleship, you want
a
battle carrier. And you don't want their cruisers, you want their Mark II cruisers. And you don't want their frigates, you want their Mark II frigates, or you want their Mantas, right? Like, it's just, you know, they're definitely the fleet that I kind of look at the starter kit and going like, yeah, you don't want the Seashell fleet. You want the other version of the Seashell fleet that's 10 times better.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You know, and I think that they could get away with having all that extra, you know, bonus durability in the way of, you know, crew points or even movement points, since they get big bonuses to movement to begin with. So it's interesting to see if what we Okay, because with Spartan Games and Firestorm Armada, what we see when they tend to do these big releases, like with Destroyers and with Dreadnoughts, is we're starting to see a lot of uniformity in terms of...
Points?
Points, definitely.
Yeah.
But how they're being built, right? Like, if you look at the Dreadnoughts, they all get a couple more hull points. They all have the same damage rating. They all have a couple more crit points. They all have a couple more... You know what I mean? Like, they're not much different from the battleship in the sense that the majority of the stats are just slightly increased. Not necessarily... And again, I'm not talking about attack dice. I'm talking about, like, the stats for the ship.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I look at this and I say, if what we're seeing in the Mark II for the Dendrenzi battleship is going to kind of carry down, which fits with what they're doing right now...
Just like logistic improvements, like
right.
If in World War II, like stuff wasn't really getting more better in firepower, it was getting more efficient.
Right.
The Dendrenzi battleship is just more efficient. It moves faster and it gets one better firepower.
Still, just a giant space cock.
That's definitely true.
That's Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Matt.
Have a good one.
Peace.